is Sophie Lilligren. I'm from Uppsala University, where I'm a PhD student working with Susanne Höfner and Bernd Freitag. And today I'm going to talk about some work I've done with the 1D models with Susanne Höfner. So, quick introduction. I guess everybody knows what AGB stars are, but it's good to kind of see the general parameter space we're moving in. So AGB stars are cool giants with effective temperature about 2,500 to 3,500. They're long period variables with 100 to 1,000 days of pulsation periods. They're very luminous, 5,000 to 10,000 solar luminosity. And what's very interesting about these stars, of course, is that they have very significant mass loss with the slow wind. So this slow wind comes from a dynamical process that starts already in the star, in the convective envelope, which makes up most of the volume of the star. And this convective envelope is pulsating. So the radius is expanding and contracting. And when so you have expanding and contracting radius, and when this hits low density, what you get is shock waves. And the shock waves will expulse matter into the dynamical atmosphere to distances where it's actually cool enough for dust to be created. And this dust, through interaction with luminosity, with the radiation field, you get a driving of the wind. So what I've been looking at is the interaction between the dynamical atmosphere and the convecting envelope through this kind of pulsation of the surface and also the pulsation of the luminosity. So the aim of this work I've been doing is to connect variability of the star with the stellar atmosphere to figure out what this does to the mass loss and what this does to the wind velocity, and also to kind of see if it's possible to observe these interactions. So this has been done using the Darwin models, which is Susanne Höfner's dynamical atmosphere models. So these are 1D dynamical atmosphere models where you combine hydrodynamics with frequency-dependent radiative transfer. And you also have a time-dependent description of the dust in these models. So you have dust growth and dust evaporations. So what I've been looking at is this inner boundary. So these models start about a bit below one solar radius of the star. So they don't have the part where you have driving of the pulsation. So you have to have a recipe for the pulsation. And this is done at the inner boundary where you have an impermeable membrane, which is pulsating basically as a sinusoidal curve. And this has been used for these kind of models all the way back until from 1988, around when Bowen did the first kind of these models, and he used this kind of approach with the sinusoidal variation at the inner boundaries. So this is what I wanted to relax a bit, this assumption. And just to start off, to see how these models work. So these are results for one of our carbon models. And what you have is these are mass shells, which means that every line encompasses the same amount of mass. So what you see here is you see the pulsation of the star, and you see the shock waves. And these red, when the lines go red, means you have dust condensation. So what happens is you have a shock wave that goes up, and then when there's no dust, it falls back, basically, but in a ballistic kind of projection. But when you hit dust, you have acceleration through interaction, first with the radiation field with the dust, and then dust with gas, which accelerates the gas outwards. So this is why you get a wind driving in these stars. So for these stars, both you have also variation, of course, in the luminosity. And both the luminosity minimum and the maximum is very important for this kind of dynamical process. So the luminosity minimum, which is this bluish arrow here, is very important, because luminosity minimum correlates with temperature minimum, and temperature minimum is, of course, where you can get dust, or where it's the best conditions to get dust. So, and dust, of course, leads to wind driving. luminosity maximum leads to the most radiative pressure on dust, which of course leads to more driving of the wind. So what happens when you start to kind of mess around with the timing of these kind of things? So this is what I investigated, and this is done in two ways. So this gray here is the original kind of where you have both the variation of the radius and the variation of the luminosity is sinusoidal, and they are locked in phase. So their maximum is at the same time and their minimum is at the same time. And this was the case which I just explained. So this is probably not very realistic. So we changed this in two ways. First, we introduced the phase shift between the radius and the luminosity. This is something which you see in other pulsating stars, for example, Cepheids, and it's probably the case in AGB stars as well. And the other thing you also see when you look at light curves of AGB stars is you have this kind of asymmetric luminosity variation. So this was another way we changed the inner boundary to see what happens. And this is a very quite complex system. So when you start messing around with these kind of very intricate things, you get quite... We did very moderate changes, only plus minus 10%. But when we did this, we got very large... Actually, we got very large results. So for this case, this is the original case. For this case, we move the minimum of the luminosity and the maximum of the luminosity slightly earlier in respect to the shockwave. And what happens is that you get... So if you have the minimum earlier, you get cooler temperatures earlier behind the shockwaves, and you have more of these kind of lines, so more of mass shells are affected by the shockwaves, meaning you get a more effective driving. So this was a positive, this is what we call positive phase shift. You have slightly earlier minimum, slightly earlier maximum. So this led to larger mass loss rates and higher wind velocity, but just changing the phase by 10%. On the other hand, if you change in the other way, your minimum is now behind, kind of when matter starts to fall back, you don't get a very effective dust creation, and you don't get a very good wind driving. So what happens is you get a lower mass loss rate for this case. So basically what happened is that when you shift the inner boundaries, you can get more favorable conditions, which is this case, where you get 40% higher mass loss rate and 40% higher wind velocity by just changing the phase 10%. Or you can get unfavorable conditions. For this case, for example, so the green is the mass loss rate. The mass loss rate went down with 40%. So the question is, this is all very good, but can we possibly observe these kind of phase shifts in reality? And in principle, maybe we can. So the luminosity variation is simple. We look at the light curves, probably. But for the radial variation, it's a little bit harder. But there is this idea that maybe you can look at the molecular line profiles. Because if you have molecular lines which are formed, so they're formed behind, like below where you have dust, in the shockwave, you can actually see the propagation of the shockwaves by looking at the shape of the line. So what happens is when you have this kind of shockwave behavior, so here, for example, you have everything is redshifted because matter is infalling, but here you get a line splitting because you see both infalling matters and outgoing matters. And there, here, of course, everything is blue-shifted because you have matter. So by looking at the shape of particular molecular lines, maybe you can follow the maybe you can possibly follow the shockwaves and get some information about this. So this was quickly tested just on the, so this is synthetic spectra, not observations. So just tested on different cases for this line, which is a vibration rotation line, second overtone, which is formed in the correct region where you have shockwaves. So what you can see here is that these are three different cases for different phase shifts. All of the line shapes are pretty much similar, and you get this line splitting. However, depending on how you shift the luminosity variation to the radius variation, this line split will occur at different. So this is bolometric phase, so time. So this line shift will occur at different bolometric phases. So impossible. If you could, you could maybe, if you can get nice higher spectra of these kind of lines, you could possibly actually observe this. So just to conclude, these Darwin models, they're very intricate and very sensitive to even small changes in, for example, small dynamical changes at the boundary. Timing of the luminosity minimum and maximum are both very important. And just by changing things by plus minus 10%, you can get quite significant effects, like plus minus 40% of the mass loss rate and the wind velocity. This might be observable by comparing high-resolution spectra and light curves. Further, what is very interesting, of course, is that the inner boundary kind of they represent the pulsation properties of the star. So these kind of tools might be used as a diagnostics for pulsation models, which look at the pulsation of the star further in. And just to have some outlook was what is going to be continued. So I'm going to continue to work on this, of course. And these tests were all done with carbon stars. So I'm going to do similar tests for M stars, and they're already running. This is working fine. And also, I'm working with 3D models. So an idea for future project would be to do these kind of tests with boundary conditions extracted from 3D models. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Questions for Sophie?
About the luminosity variations and what we might see with very accurate light curves, which of course we have with Kepler. Is there anything that in the light curve shape that would test this?
I mean, we could see the luminosity variation will give us the shape of the, but these kind of phase shifts, I don't think you can.
I'm just thinking about looking at the harmonics and the phases between them. I mean, they're highly nonlinear pulsations, so.
Yeah, well, some of them are. Some of them are just, I mean, it's from case to case, right? I don't know. I haven't looked at the harmonics for these kind of cases, no.
Yes, Ian?
So, very nice work. But all these models are looking at fundamental mode pulsators, aren't they?
Sorry, they're looking at?
They're all looking at fundamental mode pulsators.
Yes, so these are all Mira stars, yes.
So one good thing that you could do with the 3D models is actually look at overtone pulsators.
Yes, we're trying to find them, actually.
Excellent.
So right now we have maybe 9 3D models. None of them are overtone. Like, we were not in the correct parameter space, I think, at the moment. But yes, this is, of course, what we want to do.
Okay. Do you have any intuitive feeling yet how they turn out?
For this? Yeah. No, I have no idea.
Any other questions? Yes, Lynn?
Sophia was a little bit confused in the fact that you were saying that you do include dust clouds, but do you... But do you include dust nucleation?
We have a nucleus that does. We have dust growth.
Yeah.
But we have we put some what's it called
seed
particles. Thank you. We put some seed particles in.
But how do you then know that you go from what you say there your black lines to the red lines? You know, that is the phase that you should have the seed formation, and that's not in your models. So when do you then determine that grains are formed and so that the dust is driven? That the wind is driven.
Sorry?
So how do you then know where to go from your black lines, your ballistic lines, where you say that no dust is formed, towards the red lines, where you say that dust has formed, and so that the wind is.
But I mean, you have some seed particles which doesn't that just exist, that you pick how many seed particles you want, and then when the conditions are right, you use Guyland Siedlmeyer recipe, and you get some kind of dust growth. So that's
so your condition is if the temperature is low enough.
You have temperature, you have pressure, and you have density as well is important. So all of these things interact.
And then you assume some pocket of seeds.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think you have passive seed particles all the way from that doesn't interact with the gas until you get dust growth all the way from the inner boundary all the way out.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Any other questions, comments? Okay, thank you. Thanks, Sophie.